Hello, Aquarius, and welcome to your 2015 birthday reading. It's your old pal, Eric Francis, here with you to tell a bit more about your astrology, expanding and building upon the story of cosmophilia. You belong here. There's always plenty of astrology to go around. Starting today at about 4:25 on Woodchuck Day, the day when we get to find out whether it's going to snow 6 inches or 24 inches. I didn't get the verdict on the silly tradition of weather divination today. It is the birthday of Liz Webb, the artist who did all the cosmophilia work. That's often how I remember Groundhog Day. It is your birthday right around now, and we have got some astrology for you made the more interesting by this rather spectacular full moon in your opposite sign. I am, by the fate of my schedule, but also with some conscious attention, riding on the energy of this full moon, and plan to do the whole reading as this full moon is building for maximum energy and maximum excitement. The moon has just entered Leo as of about a couple hours ago, 3 hours ago or so, and it is opposite Vesta for the beginning of this reading, highlighting Vesta in your sign, opposite Mercury, highlighting retrograde Mercury in your sign. And I have some thoughts about these things. As I speak as well, Nessus is about to leave Aquarius, the last of the slow-moving outer planets in Aquarius, to move along in a very long time. I mean, like 20 years. There have been 20 years of outer planets coming through your sign. Let's start with something on that theme. A little bit of background. As an Aquarius, I'm sure once or twice you've thought about this concept of the age of Aquarius, which most people think is a quote-unquote good thing, not a quote-unquote bad thing. I think it's a thing to be cautious of, and I think that in acknowledgement of that, speaking to you on a personal level, the cosmos has blessed you with these outer planet transits, these pretty relentless outer planet transits, to help you subvert the property of Aquarius that makes the age of Aquarius a thing to be a bit cautious about. And that property is crystallization. All of the signs have a certain thing they do. It's a combination of an energetic pattern, a way that they shape reality, a way that thought waves are interpreted through that sign. Aquarius is a very interesting mix of intellectual and emotional. In many ways, the intellectual quality of Aquarius is a kind of a scrim thrown over the the deeper resonant quality of Aquarius, which is Pisces, your second house. And as I've mentioned here and there, if Aquarius is the sign of the water bearer, the water that you are bearing is the water of Pisces. So you come with this urn, or in some versions of Aquarius, the Nile Normalica, a ruler. We don't see that illustration of Aquarius very often, but the Babylonian concept of Aquarius had that entity, Nut, perhaps, who is illustrated in the Crowley card about Aquarius, the star, measuring the Nile, right? Very important, because you got to know how the crops are going to do. But that water is the relevant thing, right? Without the water, the measurement is pointless. Without the water, the urn is pointless. And so many people mistake Aquarius for a water sign, naturally enough. the word aqua is in it, you would think, oh, well, that sounds like water. Does sound like water, but water is what is being contained, what is being held. Now, as for this property of crystallization, one of the things Aquarius does is it forms them into patterns. This goes beyond the more surface level interpretations of Aquarius involving conformity or individuality, although you can see some of that in the discussion of the formation of patterns. And the formation of patterns is necessary on one level, but very dangerous on another level, because that which becomes too established in its patterns cannot continue to exist in a biological and dynamic universe. And so there always is a kind of an antidote for the reversal of patterns. And one of the things that we have seen since the 90s, when Uranus entered your sign, is that there have been outer planets, very powerful outer planets, acting on you, whether you're Aquarius rising or Aquarius sun. If you're Aquarius sun, that raises the probability of having other planets in Aquarius and transiting large god of change type planets. Uranus, Neptune, Chiron, Nessus, to give a few examples, have come through your sign and all but ensured that you would not get stuck in a certain pattern that you then could not get out of. And for all the things that are ruled in this world by Aquarius, of which I believe the most important one is the internet, which is another way of saying the age of digital storage and retrieval of information, of digital communication, of digital art, digital everything, basically. This has kept the systems loose and flexible and dynamic compared certainly to what they would be without it. And it has kept you on your toes in a state of almost constant change. So as we begin this reading here in pretty much at the midpoint of the second decade of the 21st century, kind of clipping along, isn't it? This is, not that long ago we were thinking about the year 2000, and now suddenly it's 15 years past that, and 2000 is a distant memory that seems like quite old times. You are finally being relieved of the intense pressure of outer planet transits that have made it challenging for you to stabilize. And what I believe you will now have is a chance to stabilize, to be able to get some grounding in a way that you have had difficulty doing, perhaps going back to the mid to late 1990s, and to establish a kind of an understanding with yourself in that experience. But this has been restless times, restless times. Uranus through your sign was electrifying in that Uranian way. That's going on from, let's see, like the late 90s till around 2004-5, when Uranus goes into Aquarius, Pisces. I lived through Uranus and Pisces, and that was a jolt, a 7-year jolt. And then you've had that followed by Neptune coming through, and similarly, right around the same time, Chiron coming through, all working in different ways, all having the same basic effect, which is the inability to get too settled in to whatever it is you're doing, wherever you happen to be, whatever relationship you happen to be in. There is the constant influence of change. And that is departing, and that is a big deal. It is a very big deal, because it means that the psychic climate of your life is going to have a different cast to it, a different main characteristic. Their snowmobile people are out. So what do these people do with their snowmobiles the rest of the year? Okay, and the universe has left behind a couple of messengers for you to remind you that you ought not to get too set in your ways, that remembering how easy it is for you to get set in your ways or for any particular pattern in your life to crystallize and become something that becomes a self-contained system that is not that flexible. This is the challenge we face in the age of Aquarius, where complex systems tend to move into our lives. They tend to take over. They tend to not be flexible. And it is challenging to adjust them. And now you're in a phase where some of that settling down and pattern formation will be easier. But you're being left with two reminders of why it is important to not bear down too heavily on crystallization. Reminder one, the one that any astrologer can see, is that through most of your birthday era, the time when the sun is in Aquarius, Mercury is retrograde in Aquarius. And whether you might be born a little bit before that happened, a little bit after that happened, the Mercury retrograde is essential to Aquarius 2015. What Mercury retrograde is saying is, keep your locus of awareness internal. Your concept of communication, your concept of creativity, your concept of sexuality, your concept of faith, your concept of many different things. Remember to keep an inner orientation. Part of what could crystallize is an externalization of your reality, where you can, as happens with many people many times, get left out of your own reality. Mercury retrograde in your sign through these peak moments of the sun in Aquarius is saying, keep your energy focused inwardly. Keep your an inner orientation. The other message of it, I think, is the wisdom of doubt and insecurity. There can be a false confidence that can arise when information systems, when patterns of thinking, when a certain understanding of yourself, of your life, of history, of the world become too crystallized. There can be a false confidence and a false sense of knowing, and that false confidence and false sense of knowing can be very dangerous, for lack of a better word. The reason it's dangerous is because false knowledge can preclude real knowledge. Real knowledge is necessary. Real knowledge is an active, living, changing thing that is your best friend. Okay, the second point is, speaking of points, this is called Damocles, and there's this very unusual planet in the solar system orbiting our sun. It's called Damocles, and its orbit is, I could pull up a computer-generated ephemeris, but it is a very strange orbit. Remembering these figures are approximate, spends about 12 years in Aquarius, and then like about 3 years to total in every other sign. It just blazes through every other sign. And so it's a planet that's in Aquarius almost all the time, and then it just whips through the rest of the solar system. It's apparently a fragment of a comet, and it's the first of its type that's discovered, and it's named for a figure from mythology named Damocles. And the story of Damocles, who was a kind of a servant of the king, who was envious of the king, was that he's, you know, the king realized he was envious of him, and he said, okay, you can sit in that throne for one day. And the person sat in the throne and realized that there was a sword hanging over his head with the point down, suspended by one thread of horsehair. And to sit in that throne, the person, the king, and then his servant, had to live with the possibility all the time that this sword could break free of its single thread that was holding it up and split his head open. Now, what's that got to do with you? There's a reminder there that to me seems like a kind of a relic of all these outer planet transits, which kept you on your toes all these years, which kept you dealing with constant change and never letting you get too settled into much of anything, requiring constant adjustment and adaptation. The remaining planet, slow mover, in your sign, which no one's going to be talking about, because most astrologers have never heard of this thing and don't know what it is, but it's there, is Damocles reminding you that no matter how settled into your life experience you may be, that you always must be on the edge. So we have Mercury retrograde saying doubt is necessary, inquiry is necessary. Never convince yourself that you know yourself so well that you have the answer for everything about you, and never really, I don't think, let yourself kind of falsely convince yourself you know everything about the world there is to know, which you're unlikely to do. But to remember to keep making an inquiry, and that every inquiry of the world is also an inquiry of yourself. You are inquiring ultimately with your own mind and with your own consciousness, and no matter what anyone tells you, you must verify that against your own internal reality. Part two, Damocles there for years to come saying, okay, so however relaxed and settled you might get, there's this additional factor. There is this special challenge with having authority over your life, and it is, in a sense, a reminder of not only the transience of your dominion over your existence, but also a reminder that you don't know the time of things. We don't know if or when that thread is going to snap. That thread could hold up for centuries. It's horsehair, after all. It might snap any day, so it's a reminder. Speaking of edges, of which Damocles is a very good illustrator of, because it's so edgy, for this reading, Nessus is in the very, very end of Aquarius. Now, Nessus will change signs into Pisces prior to the sun going into Pisces. So that means there'll be a couple of birthdays at the end of Aquarius where Nessus is not in Aquarius. But I think that the message of Nessus on the very edge of Aquarius is a helpful reminder of the initiations that you have been through. Nessus in particular is a harbinger of the need for accountability, the need for taking responsibility for one's own life. And lodged as it is, where it is right now, at the end of the sign Aquarius, it is in the last degree of that sign. And that degree is one of the signs that is, I think, one of the most beautiful signs in the Sabian symbol set of symbols, in that it illustrates a spiritual initiation. So I'm going to read you that symbol. Now, it's going to sound really, really cryptic, and I wasn't planning on doing this, but since we're here, and since Nessus is here, and since I just think this degree in many ways is the degree that kind of holds this whole set of symbols, the Sabian symbols, up as, well, valid, besides the fact that they work. And you may not have heard of these symbols, but way back in the 20s, an astrologer by the name of Reverend Dr. Mark Edmund Jones and a friend of his who was a clairvoyant named Elsie Wheeler did what I believe was the first ever channeling of a degree-by-degree system for astrology, so that all 360 degrees got an image, a symbol, that she channeled. She's a She was a seer. And Dr. Jones would choose a card. She didn't know what degree it was for, and she would get a picture. He would write it down. She'd say what it was. He'd write it down. She'd pull another card with a degree and sign written on it. She would get a picture. He would write it down. This took one day. And it's become one of the most influential things in modern astrology. So let me get that book and read you the symbol for 30 Aquarius. To me, one of the things that tells us a lot about Aquarius. Okay. The book is called An Astrological Mandala. The author is Dane Rudyar, who is reinterpreting the Sabian symbols from his colleague, somewhat older colleague, Dr. Jones. And here is Rudyar's language, not Elsie Wheeler's language, but Rudyar's, for 30 Aquarius. He says, deeply rooted in the past of a very ancient culture, a spiritual brotherhood in which many individual minds are merged into the glowing light of a unanimous consciousness is revealed to one who has emerged successfully from his metamorphosis. It's a long sentence. I'm going to read it a second time, and then I will pause at key points. Okay. Deeply rooted in the past of a very ancient culture, a spiritual brotherhood in which many individual minds are merged into the glowing light of a unanimous consciousness is revealed to one who has emerged successfully from his metamorphosis. Okay. This is, I think, the perfect picture of Aquarius at its best. There is the soul group illustrated, the spirits, the entities, human or otherwise, rejoicing in the arrival of a member of their group who has emerged successfully from his or her metamorphosis. And the existence of this soul group is revealed to you. This idea, I think, represents Aquarius at its most sublime, at its most, in a sense, esoteric, which means slightly veiled behind the personality level descriptions. And I think that much of its beauty comes in the understanding that this sign is about the relationship of the one to the group, the one in relationship to his or her own individual passage, but how that individual passage is always, by its nature, part of something else, part of something much larger than itself. And it, perhaps my favorite thing, is that it describes the inherently spiritual quality of Aquarius, and it does so in a way that is beyond the limits of this crystallization factor. So today, as I'm reading, Nessus remains in this very last degree. And it is a reminder for you that the challenges of life, the challenges of integrity that we all face, the perils of the world that we live in, the difficulties that we have to go through, so many of which we ascribe to the need to grow, are inherently contained in Aquarius. And for you, there is this reminder with Nessus there that the passage you have been through all of these years has actually been for something truly significant. And now you are at a final stage of one particular very long journey through your sign. A journey that has been in some ways extended in linear time by the presence of other planets, in some ways extended by the duration of the transits of known planets like Neptune, which is a very slow mover. And yet now there is a point of emergence, a point of basically, in the words of the Sabian symbols, having successfully completed your transition, having successfully completed your initiation. Obviously, the universe keeps on moving. Obviously, transits keep coming and keep going. You have many planets in your chart, and numerous planets are taking transits at the same time. But in terms of your own psychic development, your own personality development, I would look for the evidence of and the ways in which you can observe that you really are at a point of transition into something that is very different than what you have been through. Now, with outer planet transits, there is often a residual effect. When we experience an outer planet transit, it can be so intense and go on for so long and be so difficult to comprehend that it sometimes seems like it never ends. And you've been through one after the next. And it may take a little time for you to settle down. Indeed, with every planet that has left Aquarius over the past few years, you have settled down a little bit more. And I believe that the importance of not getting too settled will not be lost on you. But you have to maintain a balance. I mean, it is necessary at a certain point to say, all right, this portion of the work is done. I'm not going to think about what has to happen in the future. And in fact, it's time to think about what I can do with what I have acquired, what I can do with what I have learned and gained, and what I can do with what I have become. And as you have been doing all this learning and gaining and becoming, planets have found their way into your second and third houses. Second house being your spiritual bank account. Now, we might say that for any second house, but especially having Pisces as your spiritual bank account. That is saying a lot, because Pisces is one of those signs that just has a kind of an infinite connection to that which is beyond us. And yet for you, it's something that is not only accessible, but must be accessible. And it is very challenging to have Pisces on your second house, which is normally a house of one's tangible resources, because Pisces is anything but a tangible resource. Pisces exists largely in a state of potential. It can exist in a state of unrealized talent. It is somewhat numinous, ineffable, difficult to describe. It does not have a solid form. It is mist or liquid rather than being, you know, a mountain range or twins or the goddess. Though the goddess is very much at home there and currently in your sign, in your second house, your other sign. And the illustration of a significant collection of planets and two spectacular conjunctions that are in your solar return chart in Pisces, in your second house, are happening now. One of them is Venus conjunct Neptune, and the other is Mars conjunct Chiron. So in both, we have either Venus or Mars involved, important polarity in the zodiac, and then each of those is conjunct an outer planet. And furthermore, each of those, because it's conjunct an outer planet, has begun a new cycle. And so I would say that the thing to do is to basically recognize how much you have got, how much you have accumulated, how much water is in that urn, how deep is that river, and that you take ownership of that. You take possession of that. I was working with a friend from the neighborhood, a young woman about 25 years old, and got to working on her chart. And with anyone really, but especially with someone young, you have to talk about self-esteem and self-value and acknowledge what a fucking battering we take on this planet in terms of our confidence and our self-esteem. And so here she is with Pisces on the second house, thinking, how am I going to explain this? And what I came up with was this concept of Pisces on the second, first of all, presenting a challenge because it is so much. It is oceanic. It is cosmic. But it lacks a tangible form. We get that tangible form by working it, by developing those talents, by extracting all that Pisces has to offer, all of the beautiful visual, musical, empathetic, healing, loving, friendly, beautiful, humanitarian qualities that come with Pisces, which are incarnate in your value system. This is you. This is about you. And then to assist in making those Piscean things, which are very fragile, very difficult to dial in, very difficult to find a home for in this world, we depend upon the planets that are there. And whatever planets you may have in Pisces in your natal chart right now, at this transition point, at this moment of emergence and of evolution and transition into your life, there is this utterly stunning double conjunction involving Venus and Mars, conjunct outer planets, as if to say, these gifts, which might themselves seem to lack a bit of tangibility, for example, Neptune, that's kind of hard to pin down, Chiron, well, you have to have some spiritual training, and training as a healer or a powerful Chiron in your chart, or be the kind of person who really gets how much we can learn through adversity, who likes to rise to the occasion, all properties of Chiron. You need those traits to really feel and identify Chiron, and the cosmos is saying, well, as if that wasn't enough to have Chiron and Neptune in your second house, filling that spiritual bank account, helping you focus the gifts that you have, recognize them, feel them in greater form. We're going to add two outer planets, inner planets, conjunct the outer planets. We're going to add Venus, which is considered a kind of a close relative of Neptune, and also one of the rulers of Pisces. It's exalted in Pisces, conjunct the modern ruler of Pisces, Neptune. And in addition, as if Chiron was not enough, we're going to bring in something that's kind of similar to Chiron when it's working right, that is resonant with Chiron, that is warrior-like, much like Chiron is. That would be Mars, and put that in a conjunction to Chiron. And the story is that the conjunction makes the energy, the qualities of the slow mover, say in this case Chiron or Neptune, accessible in a tangible, emotional, see and hear in the real physical world, act on, observe, and notice way, so that you actually can tap in to this vast pool of resources that you have. And the implication here, as I see it, is that the activation of the real world personality, three-dimensional space and time activation of Chiron and of Neptune by these much more tangible, easy to observe and feel and kind of more normal inner planets is activating your spiritual gift by the property of desire and being desired, one of the great motivators of human existence. Wanting is powerful. Being wanted is also powerful, perhaps less so, because it puts you in the position of reacting or responding rather than the position of initiating. And I think that it is vital along the way to using your spiritual faculties to adapt to existence in the 21st century in Western society, that you be able to wield the tool of desire in a conscious way. That is the conjunction to Chiron, that you be able to wield the tool of desire in a way that is associated with healing and associated with knowledge and learning, all of them properties of Chiron, so that you can take responsibility for directing yourself. Chiron tends to demand more integrity than we're accustomed to, say, for example, with Mars. It has a way of knocking down people when their integrity is faltering, when their awareness is faltering, and rewarding when awareness and integrity are honored and maintained. And in the style of Pisces and in the style of Mars, there is a reminder that there is something that is urgently necessary in your definition of integrity to be in harmony with what you want, and to then, in the larger environment that surrounds you and the value systems that you possess and the intention that you have to serve as a force for good in this world, that you be able to handle desire, not as a renunciate, not as someone who gives up all the good things and meat and sex and pleasure and singing and dancing. To the contrary, there is an implication here. It's not even an implication. It could hardly be more boldly written that the thing you want is to want in a conscious and loving way, and to not be afraid of wanting, to not be afraid of desire, and with Venus conjunct Neptune, to not be afraid of your attractiveness, to be in harmony with the charismatic attractiveness that you have, with the sexual beauty that you possess, with the gifts that you have to offer, with the essential sweetness and lovingness about you, that too must not intimidate you or give you the feeling that in some way you're going to be exploited because you're just nice. And that sensation of fear of being exploited is one of the worst things that turns people into assholes, is a defensiveness around their own beauty, which then kind of turns into a homeopathic nightmare, because it's taking something that is inherently beautiful and generous and kind of flipping it sideways into something that requires kind of vicious or stealth or something defense around it. And so there's an image here of let the desirable side of you be desirable, whether it's your appearance or the physical qualities you possess or your personality or the gifts that you offer, the talent that you have to share, whatever your assets are, your knowledge, your contact with God, your contact with philosophical systems, your art, whatever it might be, there's no need to defend that. And that in defending it or acting as if it's always something that can be taken away from you, you will just lose it of your own volition, not needing anyone else's help to lose it. And then in the next conjunction over, you have Mars and Chiron reminding you that desire is an essential, let's say, form of offense in the world, that you are taking control of your life by admitting and recognizing what you want and what you desire and using that consciously as a tool. I keep saying that. That partly is the blessing of Chiron, to use your desire consciously as a tool when combined with Mars. And this aspect can bestow significant power. In Pisces, it is often going to be creative power, creative talent, and the ability to serve in a bold way. Typically, Pisces type power is not power wielded over people, but rather power wielded either in service of some art or in service of humanity. And so there is a lot reminding you that you possess a great gift. And the, as I see it, perhaps speaking as a philosopher or as an astrologer, giving that gift will remind you what you possess, what you have. To the contrary of concealing or hiding or coveting that gift. And with these placements, and I'll conclude on this note, the second house is self-esteem. And I would say that to have only Neptune and Chiron here could represent a gift, a significant gift, but also a crisis of self-esteem, because both Neptune and Chiron both have their own way of alienating people and of, you know, in a sense, asking more questions than they can answer. But when we add Venus and Mars into the equation, the question and the answer are together. There is a sensation of tangibility. There is, therefore, the ability to experiment with the substance of your values and also to feel love for yourself that is as substantial as loving anything or anyone, like a cat or a dog or a person or a plant or a place or a landscape. That's not considered abstract. Self-love can often be considered or experienced as abstract. And here you are with this potential for it to be visceral, real, down to earth, something you can see, hear, smell, touch, and taste. All right, let's take a little break, and I will return to you in a digital instant.